Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or you could visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the most recent ones, the last five, including this one, just about when we get off the air, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about making judgments, about being judgmental about, well, about the other people, about their group, about their organization. And why we shouldn't, you know, we're humans, so we all do make a first impression, don't we? We think about these things, but the key is to think about it and not to let it adversely impact reaching a successful outcome, and to recognize the judgmental actions of other people about us and not let it prevent us from reaching a successful outcome. So let's talk. A lot of times when we do these programs, and if we don't, people call me on it and go, well, you need to do that, we define what we're talking about first. And so I think what we're going to do first is we're going to decide, what does it mean to be judgmental? What does that mean? What is it? What happens when we're judgmental or when someone else is judgmental about us? Mm-hmm. And I think one of the first things to do is to just look it up. And that's what I did in the dictionary, and it says that being judgmental is characterized by a tendency to judge harshly. Yes, it's a negative act, isn't it? A tendency to judge harshly. We're hardly ever judgmental in a positive way. That's, well, like, that wouldn't be called judgmental, would it? Yeah, people are agreeing with me. Thank you for all of your participation. I see there's lots of people. Thank you very much for being here. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean to be judgmental? Ross and others are saying, is a good definition, that judgmental is allowing your first impression to be your final impression and refusing to change. What a good definition. Thank you. Allowing your first impression to be your final impression and refusing to change. We all get a first impression of the people we're dealing with, right? And sometimes it's proven wrong, but we have to have an open mind and not let our first impression be our final impression. Just go, well, I know what this person is, and just snap our minds shut. Mm-hmm. What a good definition. Thank you. Kuya says that being judgmental is looking for validation of your initial judgment and refusing to see anything that doesn't validate it. Ooh, another excellent definition. We get a lot of agreement. Looking for the validation of your initial judgment and refusing to see anything that doesn't validate it. Isn't that true? Some people, they make a snap judgment. They make an initial judgment. And they only look and they only accept the things that validate it, that go to that their initial opinion. And no matter what somebody does, they ignore the good part. And they just stick to their first impression. You know, people like that, yeah, we're getting a lot of agreement and a lot of really egregious examples. Yes, it's being judgmental when you look for validation of your initial judgment and refuse to see anything that doesn't validate it. Good point. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, so many wonderful definitions. Thank you. And thank you for all of your participation. We're getting a lot of agreement because really we've all seen somebody that's judgmental, right? We've all known somebody that is. And they're impossible. I mean, they're hard to get along with because it's like, well, that might have been your first impression, but let's look further. We need to deal with these people. We need to compromise. We need to negotiate. We need to reach a successful outcome. We can't just stagnate and say, well, that's how it is. I've judged it to be so. No, you must be able to revise your first impression. Mm-hmm. Adriana has another wonderful definition. Thank you. It's being judgmental is judging someone according to your social norms, not theirs. Ah, thank you, Adriana. Yes. Judging someone according to your social norms, not theirs. Yes. You know what I'm getting a lot of examples of? I'm getting a lot of agreement. Thank you for all of your participation. There's quite a few examples. You know, different cultures, different social norms treat time differently. Mm-hmm. Now, I must confess that I personally am very timely. I make a real effort to get someplace on time if I've got an appointment or there's something to be, or that we have an agreement as to a time or there's going to be a program or whatever. I'm on time. Real punctual. And actually, I tend to be a little early because I leave extra time to get there, right? Yeah, I've seen a lot of agreement. But sometimes that's not a social norm. People don't regard it as an actual time. They regard it as several people are saying, thank you for all of your participation. Kelvin and others are saying that a lot of times it's a social norm of their culture to say that it's going to be 5 o'clock that we're supposed to meet, and they read it as 5 o'clock-ish, I-S-H, kind of somewhere around 5 o'clock, certainly not earlier, but yeah, I'll be there. Yeah. I don't know if this is a truism or not. I'm getting quite a few people that say that that's not even a social norm, that is a generational norm, that the youngest generation now that's in the workforce tends to regard time as not an actual punctual, this is when we're going to see each other. It's more of a fluid idea of somewhere around 5 o'clock. I'm getting a lot of agreement about that, and a lot of younger people are agreeing that it's just normal because they pack everything together so tight. Okay, let's think about this. I've known people who are funny about time as opposed to my incredible punctuality of all ages. This is not new to me. I've been in the professional business of being an attorney and a professional mediator for nearly 30 years now, and that was before this generation was doing that. So, yeah, I think it has more to do with personal timekeeping, but judging someone according to your social norms, not theirs. Good point. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of time and a lot of I'm going to call it dress code. People that come not dressed in a manner that other people think is appropriate to the situation. Mm-hmm. Dress code. Not really that there's a formal dress code or something. Some places do have that, but how you're dressed, as opposed to very casual, as opposed to a business suit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of the word flip-flop used. You know those little rubber shoes that you wear, well, okay, that I would wear in a public shower and nowhere else, but those little rubber thong-type shoes that are extremely casual, yes. So, we've decided what being judgmental is. Mm-hmm. So, what do we base the judgment on? I think that's our next question, because we're kind of heading towards it. How do we base our judgmental opinion? We've kind of come to a judgment. We've kind of made a first impression, or maybe more than a first impression, and we have to stop and say, wait a minute, that's judgmental on my part. What should I do about it? And how can I prevent it from negatively impacting us getting to a successful outcome? That's really the key to this. You know, on this show, we're practical. We don't just talk in theory. We want to know to guard against it, to think about it, to think about what our first impression will be on other people, mm-hmm. and to not let these things get in our way. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to base our judgment on? What kind of judgments have we made? Mm-hmm. George and others are going for personal appearance, which I think is the dress code concept. Somebody shows up and they're dressed unusually, in your opinion. You know what? You're dressed unusually in their opinion, too. You know, judgment goes both ways, right? Yeah, I'm getting a lot of agreement. It's kind of like, well, I might think that I might judge that you are inappropriately dressed if you come in shorts and a flip-flop, but you may judge that I am overdressed, that I'm wearing a suit, and I'm going to be hard to deal with because I'm stuffy. Yeah, see, judgment goes both ways, right? Mm-hmm. Laura and others are saying also the wearing of symbols. Well, you know, when somebody wears a symbol like a cross or a head covering and like that, it is a sign, it is an indication of who they are, what their faith is. Now, I must confess that those of you who see me, and yes, I see that a lot of you have, thank you. A lot of you have seen me on a seminar or a workshop or something. And it is true that I have a tendency to wear a cross. But I don't proselytize, which I guess people are somewhat amazed by. But it is a sign of personal faith. And I take all comers, and I don't judge other people. But that's a sign of my personal faith. And I do wear a symbol around my neck frequently. All right, most of the time. So wearing of symbols. You know, a lot of people are mentioning this, and this is very, in the United States, and I know that this is a global show, but I think it's popular all over, because when I travel, I see this, especially for the younger generation. So I think these trends kind of spread. A lot of people nowadays have piercings besides earrings, besides a single set of earrings, which is very traditional, have piercings and tattoos. Mm-hmm. And that's something that people kind of judge. Oh, especially, you know, and it is something that tends to draw the eye, and you kind of think about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes piercings and tattoos are kind of symbolic. You know, you ever see anybody that has some on their, like, fingers that they make a word and things like that? Yeah. Piercings and tattoos, people get an impression about you, about the person that they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also people are saying that they are tribal, not literally, right? Because literally is a cultural thing. Tribal in the sense that they indicate a social group, or maybe even a cultural group, more like a social group usually for just, may I call them style tattoos and piercings? The kind that are kind of faddy, that are F-A-D, fad. Yes, people are going fatty. No, not fat, fad. The kind that are a style of fashion more than a cultural symbol of ritual and ceremony. Mm-hmm. Like the Maori and their facial tattoos. I wasn't referring to that. I don't think. I suppose that would be a first impression too. But piercings and tattoos are stylish nowadays, but they do make a first, they do make an impression. And people that are in the social circle will judge it as very cool. And people that are outside the social circle may judge it as something else. You never know. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people going to style of dress. I'm going to go for that being personal appearance. I think personal appearance includes what you're wearing, how you've put it together. Yes, it's a good point. It includes the tats and the piercings and the symbols and like that. Mm-hmm. What other things, what other judgments do we use? What other ways do we base our judgments? Dixon and others are saying membership in an ethnic group. I'm hoping that's not as much as sometimes, but as it used to be, but yeah, afraid that could be true. Membership in a certain sex, too. Mm-hmm. Sexual orientation, if you wear it on your sleeve. Mm-hmm. Karen and others are saying membership in a religious group. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some discussion about religious group, and I'm going to make a distinction between ethnicity and cultural and religious and social groups. Because your ethnic group is not really something that you choose, right? Ordinarily, at least. But your social and your religious group are. Well, all right, people are saying you can't really get out. You are what you're born. But basically, you could change that, depending, I suppose, on the strictures. But your ethnicity cannot be changed. Therefore, you've chosen your social and your cultural and your religious group. But you don't really choose your ethnic group. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, it's kind of there's a distinction there. Mm-hmm. You know, Rick and others are saying that people also make a judgment concerning amount of education. Very good point. Especially when we are doing something that is rather in a professional context, in a work environment context. Level of education. Mm-hmm. People are saying professional credentials. You know, it's a good point. Quite a few people are saying that level of education is indicated by the manner of speaking of the person. And, you know, it's true even in the United States. Because, of course, there's a grammatical way of speaking, which is kind of an indication of some schooling. What do you think? And also, we have regional accents. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people ask me where I'm from, and they mean in the United States, because they hear that I have an accent that occurs to Americans, and this is true all over the world. Wherever you're from, you've got kind of a regional accent, even if you're speaking your native tongue, and especially if you're not. But even when I'm speaking English, people ask me where I'm from because I use some regional idioms and also because of the manner in which I speak. Mm-hmm. And it is because I am originally from the Midwest. It's a different kind of accent from the South, and from New York has a specific accent. You see, even in the United States, we have regional accents, and that's true all over the world. Mm-hmm. But not just regional, also education. And some you can tell an educational level oftentimes by a verbal presentation, can't you? And it gives you an impression. Mm-hmm. People are saying they could see professional credentials, too, and evidence of expertise or lack of expertise. There are, of course, some people in the world, and of course it's not any of us because we're not that kind of people, right? But there are people in the world who just like to hear themselves talk, yes. And you'll know that, too. You will judge that. Mm-hmm. So, we've been talking a lot about kind of the generality. But, you know, this is a rather practical show. Anybody have any personal experience? What personal experience have you had with someone being judgmental about you? And what did you learn? Because that's the thing. See, we try to not be judgmental. And if we are judgmental, we recognize it and we say, wait a minute, I have made an assumption. I have made a judgment about someone based on the things that we're talking about. Now, let me test and see that that's true or not true, but I won't let it stand in my way of negotiating a successful outcome because I'm a sensible, logical person, and I listen to Sue. No, but it's important, right? So but sometimes people are judgmental about you, and you can feel it. You know that it's happening, and you need to counteract it. And sometimes even the direct approach, people are saying, how do you counteract it? Well, by your actions, by your words, and perhaps even by the direct approach. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what personal experiences you had? I've got a lot of people that are saying race and ethnicity. Probably number one, because people have a preconceived notion, don't they? Also, religion is very high. I can see a lot of people going for religion. And for place of birth, interesting. In the United States, we don't think about that so much, but I can see that. Place of birth, and this is, of course, an international, a global show. Place of birth might make a difference. People are saying place of birth is ethnicity. Maybe, but maybe not. You might not be whatever the majority ethnicity is in the place of your birth. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. Quite a few people are saying the neighborhood you live in, where you live, causes people to make a judgment. Mm-hmm. Especially in a big city area. I think that's true, for example, in a lot of big cities in the United States. There are kind of areas that are considered to be less desirable. They're a little more violent and like that. How about school you went to? You know, around here we say Ivy League for schools that have a very fancy, schmancy reputation or very expensive. School you went to. Now, this is interesting. I've got a lot of you are saying age. People make a judgment about your age, and quite frankly, it's cut in both ways. Not just that some people are a little bit older, and therefore people make a judgment about. A lot of people who are on the older end are saying a judgment is made about their technical skills, their computer skills, because they're a little bit older. Mm-hmm. So that is an age judgment. But then again, I have a lot of people that are saying that they get an age judgment because they are young. Mm-hmm. And thank you for all of your participation. We have a really wide group of people this time. It's very exciting. But younger, too. Inexperienced, very young. Mm-hmm. Religious and cultural group. I'm going to go for that being what we just talked about. Type of job. That's interesting. What do you do as a profession, people judge? Well, especially, I suppose, if the issues call for some expertise, some specialized knowledge that you might have or not have, expertise. And that might be a positive judgment. I just said that being judgmental was harsh, but that actually might be a positive one, depending on whether or not it values your expertise. And, you know, we asked also, what did you learn? And just about everybody, and thank you for all of your participation, just about everybody said that they learned how it felt to be someone be judgmental against them, about them, and to not do it to others. Good point. We understand how it feels when it happens to us. And we go, oh, that's not good. And then we make a big effort not to repeat the cycle and not to be judgmental on someone else. Good point. Thank you for all of your participation. Yes, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are the last five. People asking about preconceived notions and things. We have talked about that in prior shows. The last five shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So, we've talked about our personal experiences with having someone be judgmental. And I see a lot of people are using basically the word bigotry, like to be a bigot, to be biased, to be prejudiced. These are all about the same idea. So I think, and you know, this show is unscripted. We go wherever we take ourselves. And I always say I learned something, and I hope you do too. So let's talk about that for a minute. What's the difference between being judgmental and being bigoted, being prejudiced, being bigoted? What's the difference? Is judgmental the same? Is it the same, really just different words for the same thing? Pratiti says, and this is a good point, that between judgmental and bigoted is a matter of degree. Judgmental is usually from a personal opinion of the individual. I think that's a very good point. Thank you. Bigotry is something you learn. It's something that was taught to you from the outside about certain types of people. But judgmental is kind of something you do by watching and listening to the individual who's in front of you. It's not a very nice thing to do, and you have to be careful because it'll cause you to not be able to deal with this person. You have to be careful of it. But it is a matter of degree, and it is usually kind of personal, judgmental. You know, Gabriel says there's no difference if you're being judgmental concerning the entire group. No difference if being judgmental concerning the entire group. I'm getting actually quite a bit of agreement with that. If you're judgmental about an entire group, I think maybe that is kind of bigotry. What do you think? Yeah, getting some agreement about that. Well, yeah, quite a few people are saying it's still different because you can be judgmental about a group because you've had an experience, a group experience with them. And that would be different than bigotry when you have an opinion about a group that does not stem from your personal experience with them. This is interesting. Sharulata, sorry about that. I hope I did that right, says that judgmental can be personal to the judger based on prior experience, but bigotry is induced by outside lessons, not personal experience. Ooh, what a good way of putting it. Thank you. Judgmental can be personal to the judger based on prior experience, but bigotry is induced by outside lessons, not personal experience. Good point. It's personal to the person making the judgment because they have experience that they're bringing to the forefront, but it's not experience with this person, which is why it's judgmental. But bigotry is induced by outside lessons, not personal experience. I think that's fair to say. Jason says that bigotry is taught, judgmental is acquired. Bigotry is taught, judgmental is acquired. bigotry being taught by respected people within our culture about the other, right? And judgmental is indeed usually acquired through personal experience. It's been your personal experience that you don't do well with that kind of person, whatever that kind of person is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'll go with that. Bigotry is taught, judgmental is acquired. I'm getting a lot of agreement. Thank you for all of your participation. Mm-hmm. Lindy's and others are saying that bigotry is hard to overcome, but judgments on an individual basis change and evolve during the process. There we have it. Thank you. Lindy and others are saying that bigotry is hard to overcome because it's a taught lesson, often from childhood, right? But judgments on an individual basis change and evolve during the process. We made a first impression judgment, and it's changing and evolving as we deal with this person. Mm-hmm. And that's why judgments change. Mm-hmm. But it's true that bigotry often does not. Mm-hmm. Bigotry is hard to overcome. And, you know, that really is the reason, this judgmental idea really is the reason why Recipe for Peace Now has the emphasis on the networking and the time outs where you've got something to do, like eat, like have some, like break bread together. You know, I always say, and those of you who have, thank you for all of the returnings, thank you for all of your participation. Those who have not been here before, you can listen to prior shows either the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, last five are on that, all of them archived at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. And I say this each show, but it's really important. The food, you know, we're a practical group. And the food idea of having the potluck is not because we're hungry necessarily. I mean, it could be dinner time. But it's really a tool to get us talking outside of the formal process so that we can change and evolve our judgments. So that it's not bigotry. We can listen, we can change, we can go, oh, this individual is not like I thought. Mm-hmm. I could have to rethink that. And so we can really think about each other as people and not just parts of a process. Otherwise, we won't have a successful outcome. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to make my little speech that you all expect me to make because people are already making it for me. Thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. And whenever you have food, and we're about to talk about the food part. Whenever you bring food, beforehand, you must communicate with all of your participants concerning any food allergies, food prohibitions, or dietary restrictions, like religious prohibitions. And then you communicate that to everybody so that nobody has a bad time. This is meant to be a convivial atmosphere creation, right? Right. And so we want everybody to be able to partake and partake safely. Also, when you have people bringing food, it needs to be labeled. Not what it is, meatloaf, but what is in it so that I can determine whether or not I can eat it. Yes, very, very important. So, also, those of you who have been here before, thank you. Welcome back. And to new people, welcome to you, too. That I think that the host, which is usually us, should have some extra food, primarily because I just hate running out. It makes for a bad party. And I think that we should have at least one safe dish. Now, what is a safe dish? It's something that does not have too many ingredients. We've taken the survey, and our participants should not be allergic to a food restriction or a religious restriction or a dietary restriction against. And it is food that my participants would be familiar with and would have eaten before. Mm-hmm. Now, that may be different than yours. This is a global show. So I'm going to say this is a safe recipe. It also happens to be vegetarian, unless you use chicken stock, which is delicious. But if you want to keep it vegetarian, use vegetable stock. So here we go. It's lentils with toasted pita. You don't want to use toasted pita. Get some crackers. It's meant to be scooped up is the reason. You get yourself a spoon, and everybody takes a spoonful because we don't want to double dip in the bowl, right? And takes a spoonful of the lentils and some crackers or some toasted pitas or something to scoop it up with. Yes, people are already volunteering things like celery and stuff. Anything you've got that you scoop things up with. The other end being, yes, people are going... There's a contingent of you that are going, celery would be wonderful, yes. And there's a contingent that are going, Fritos would be wonderful. I think those are opposite ends, but it's all good. Whatever you like. In fact, you could put out an assortment of things to go with the bowl of lentils in the middle. And then you could put out an assortment of things so that people could choose what they would like. I'm going to tell you the toasted pita chips. Just because they're a little bit bigger, they're nice and firm, and they're nice and crunchy, and they're really easy to make. I'm fond of recipes, as you all know, that don't take a whole bunch of time. So here we go. Let's have a cup and a half of those nice little red lentils. They're nice and sweet, and they're yummy. You can't find them, use the regular kind. 2 tablespoons of oil, a nice onion that we're going to finely chop. 3 garlic cloves that we're going to also chop up real fine. You think I put too much garlic in, take a garlic clove out. Let's give a tablespoon, like a teaspoon and a half of grated fresh ginger. You know, of course, to peel it before you grate it, right. And what's a teaspoon of ground turmeric, because it makes it pretty in addition to being delicious. And 2 cups of vegetable sauce. Two cups of vegetable stock. You know darn well, those of you who've been here before, that I'm going to use the canned kind. You want to make your own, yours will be better. Or you can use chicken stock. It will make it a non-vegetarian dish. And then we're going to have the pitas. We're going to get, about 8 of those rounds, those pita rounds, and a couple 2-3 tablespoons of olive oil, because we're going to brush them and put them in the oven. So we're going to make our lentils now. You know, you have to kind of wash lentils. You put them in a big bowl with running water. And depending on where you are in the world and depending on what kind of a brand you've used, in the States, it doesn't necessarily happen. But, you know, sometimes lentils and beans like that have, like, dirt in them. So you wash them real good just because, and you take out any things that aren't lentils, right? They, like, float around. Yeah. Not good. And any of the broken pieces and stuff. It kind of depends what kind of a batch you've gotten. But I always wash beans like that just because it seems like a really good idea. And take out... Usually, people are saying there's little stones sometimes. I hope not, because that would break somebody's tooth. But whatever kind of sticks and things sometimes there are, yeah. Okay, so now we've washed them, and we've drained them, and there's no kind of crud anymore in any kind of, you know, call it crud, but non-food stuff, yeah. Okay, so we're going to heat the oil. You add the onion and cook it until it's softened. What, about 3 minutes? Add the garlic and the ginger and the spice. And what, another minute till they all get to be all yummy and translucent-y and soft and starts to smell really good. We've used a big enough pan so that we can now add the lentils and the water and the stock, right? So that we can now just throw it in. Let's add 2 cups of stock. Use vegetable, maybe. You can use water if you'd like to, yes. I like to use stock instead of water because it adds an extra depth of flavor, but that's just me. So you add the liquid and the lentils right to the ginger and the garlic and the onion and everything, and you stir it around, bring it to a boil, reduce the heat, and simmer it for about 15 minutes. You know, lentils are kind of like rice. They absorb the liquid, and that's our goal. Unlike rice, though, if you don't start stirring after about 10 minutes, well, you have to stir it occasionally as you're going along, but you really start to stir and mix it around when the water is almost completely absorbed. Otherwise, they will stick to the bottom of your pot and make a mess. So at the very end, when you see that they're just about there, be sure and stir it all around and scrape the edges of the pot. I usually use a wooden spoon that's flat on the front. But you know what I mean, to stir it all the way around and get to the edges. Right? Right. Now, while this thing is cooking and before we have to actually stir it, make your pita toast. You cut the rounds into wedges. Mm-hmm. Depends how big your rounds are. You want to make the pita. People are going, how do you make the pita bread? You want to know the honest truth? I have no idea. It's kind of like, yeah, I'm recommending this. Fantabulous. But it's because I would buy it in a plastic bag in the grocery store for very little money, and it's all made and delicious and ready, and all I have to do is take a sharp knife and cut them into nice little wedges. Then I'm going to brush them with some oil, not making them soggy, just give them a little brush, and preheat the oven to, what, about 200? Brush them, arrange them on a baking sheet. 5 minutes, they're all lightly brown and crisp. Mm-hmm. And they make a delightful little dip. Look up just a basic pita bread recipe. I'm sure it's not very hard, kind of flour and watery. But anyway, so now we're done. We've watched this so that it doesn't stick to the pan. It's delicious. We can rewarm it a little bit when we get there, if we wanted to serve it warm. It's delicious, not warm. And we're going to put out an assortment of veggies and crackers and pita toast. And like that. And it's our safe recipe. Very yummy. Yes. Yes, if you want to make pita bread, yours will be better than mine. But, people asking about all kinds of different spices on it. You know, I always give a basic recipe that is not very spicy. This one is a little more spicy than my usual. It's got onions and ginger and turmeric and like that. But it's because I put condiments to the side, and if people want to make something more spicy, they certainly can. But it's been my experience to kind of make it middling on the spice, and people can add as they please. So yes, and yes, the pita is a lovely idea. If you want to make it yourself, just look up the recipe. People are giving me recipes for pita bread, which is very, very nice of you. But I can see that they're fairly basic, and it is easy for me to come by it. And the ingredients are not complicated to make. And quite frankly, use crackers if you can't. Or people are saying lavash, yes, those nice big firm sheets, delicious, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever you like. The trick is to make it stiff enough to be able to scoop the lentils up, because we've made, basically speaking, kind of a dip. Mm-hmm. Is that fair? Mm-hmm. And yes, of course, you can double the recipe. So that's our safe recipe. Now let's get on to our adventure recipe. I've called this a pot pie. It's not exactly, because it's more like a stew with a pot pie top to it, because it's all one big pot with a lovely baked crust. Traditionally, pot pie is little individuals, but this kind of fits the bill. And it's my idea of pot pies, because for heaven's sakes, if you're going to have a potluck, of course you don't want to have individual little ramekins of stuff, because how do you know how much people want? This way they can put their spoon, the big spoon, the serving utensil in there, and just get it. Mm-hmm. Now, this is our adventure recipe because I think it has ham. But quite frankly, it could have turkey or chicken or extra veggies. or something that you've got kind of left over a smidge, being very careful, of course, that you have refrigerated whatever that is properly. I'm going to say ham because a lot of times we have cooked ham. But the key is that whatever the protein is, it needs to be cooked. Do not put raw anything into this. It needs to be cooked. It won't cook sufficiently. Cook it first, whatever it is. So I'm going to use cooked cubed ham. You can use as you please. But whatever it is, make sure that it is cooked. And if it's a leftover, then it's not very leftover. I'm always suspicious of holding things for more than a day. I know people tell me I can, but I think it's scary. So here we go. We're going to have about a quarter cup of butter. Do not use something strange and less fattening. Let's use the quarter cup of butter. A nice chopped onion. Not too big a one. We don't need too much onion in this. A third of a cup of flour. A can of chicken broth. Even if you're going to use ham, I think the chicken broth is fine. You can also use vegetable broth if you are making it more vegetarian. Mm-hmm. Chicken broth is delicious and adds a little bit of salt, too. 3/4 of a cup of milk. Let's have 3 cups of cooked, remember the cooked part, ham or turkey or chicken, whatever you've got. 1 cup of cooked peas. Remember, everything is cooked in this. It's not going to go into the oven for very long, and we don't want raw stuff in there because we're putting it together. We're not cooking it. Right? I suppose we're warming it. But you know what I mean. Everything needs to be cooked. A cup of cooked peas and 1 cup of cooked carrots. Whatever you like. You know, those of you who have been here before know very well that I'm going to use frozen. If you're going to use frozen, you need to thaw it and pat it dry because you don't want to add the extra liquid. Mm-hmm. Now, in the United States, buttermilk biscuits come pre-made in a tube. I'm going to use it. If you do not have access to that or you would like to do your own, then make a buttermilk biscuit recipe. But they literally come in a tube. You pull them apart, and we're going to put them on the top to make the crust for our pot pie. So we're going to take the pot that we're going to eventually bake in because it's kind of easier one pot thing. And we are going to melt the butter. We're going to saute the onion, stir in the flour, and then we're going to stir it until it's nice and smooth, right? We're going to make a roux. Now we're going to gradually add the chicken broth and the milk, and we're going to keep cooking it until it's nice and thick. It's nice and bubbly, too. Use a whisk. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to add the ham and the peas, and the carrots. A lot of times I add corn, 1 cup of corn also, because it's colorful and it's delicious. And we're going to cook it. We're going to kind of make everything hot, especially if we're using frozen. Let's face it, we probably are. Now we're going to take that lovely tube of biscuits, right? We're going to separate them, and we're going to put it around the top. Mm-hmm. Going to make our crust. And also, it's going to make lovely when people dig into it with a nice serving spoon. They can get a biscuit and some of the bottom, which is delicious. Mm-hmm. Some of the pot pie, so to speak. So we've got our biscuits over the top. And we are going to bake the whole thing uncovered because we want it to turn brown. At 375 for about 20 minutes. Everything's cooked already and everything's warm. But what we're going to do is we're really baking the top. We're baking until the biscuits turn nice and golden. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is our pot pie recipe. Now, is it a pot pie? Well, yeah, kind of. It's got a crust to it. That's the buttermilk biscuits, nice and flaky. And it's got a yummy kind of creamy bottom to it. Mm-hmm. Well, it's my idea of pot pie because, quite frankly, It's easy to do for a big group. And, of course, you can prep it and bring the, well, okay, this is kind of shameful, but, you know, we're going to use the frozen tube of buttermilk biscuits. You can bring that with you separate and kind of assemble and put it in the oven if you've got an oven on the premises. And it smells wonderful. And it bakes quickly. Mm-hmm. What a good idea. So that is our adventure recipe. Now, why is it an adventure recipe? Well, because of the ham, basically. You can make it into a safe recipe rather easily by saying, I'm going to use chicken or vegetables instead of something that is pork, because a lot of people do not eat pork, and a lot of people don't eat red meat either. You could put beef in here also. And then, of course, you would use a beef stock. Mm-hmm. So, that is our adventure recipe. Mm-hmm. Now, I see that our time together is nearly up. My goodness, that went fast. I hope you learned something. I always learn something, and I hope you do too. Thank you very much for your participation. Thank you for listening. If you would like to contact us, we are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. If you would like to look at our website, it's recipeforpeacenow.com. The last 5 shows are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.